So basically, this is at the core. So you have a PSU which connects to the mains via a plug, which I don't have here, but it's basically this front plate, which then sits on top of here. And then there is a divider that connects sandwiches basically between the two parts. And then this one in the middle, I think, is the core of the project because it's a custom PCB that then interfaces with the pins of the Bitaxa. So it can light up when a share is found, and it also inside there is cool extra cooling inside because it's in this enclosed space, so it tends to run very hot. So that there is a chip, basically there is a don't know how technical I should go, but basically there is an Atmega chip that controls that fan and the LEDs. So this is one of the first iterations.
Hello guys, welcome once again to another episode of BitCorner Podcast. I hope that you have enjoyed the episode with Bram. Yeah, you know, when two podcasters come together and talk for a show, it can be really long and we could talk a lot about several things. But quite interesting things are happening is that with our planning it, we have made two podcasts so far with two podcasters and from different generations. We had Bob Burnett, that he is a boomer. Also, we have Ren from Gen Z. And in 2 weeks, I think you will see another episode with someone that, no, sorry, Ren is millennial. And the next person that you will see in 2 weeks, approximately, she is a Gen Z, also a podcaster. So I'll leave you that hint. So this way, we will have some perspective about how Bitcoin can help us in our current state of our lives. And the perspective that we have from different generations, but in the end, we come to the same conclusion that if we fix the money, we fix the world, right? But today, we're going to pivot into something different. I think in two seasons ago, we had two magnificent persons. One, that it was Scott Nathalson. We were talking about BitX, and also we had in the same season, BitMaker. So both projects are excellent. Both projects are really good. And the main goal is to help decentralize, but also educate us more about mining in Bitcoin. So today we're going to discuss a little bit about that with a new project that is very similar to this one. So I want to welcome to Gio that he is working with Wallax. So welcome, man.
Hi, Juan. Hi, everyone. Thank you for having me.
No, thanks to you. All right. I always like to start a podcast if, you know, if you can share a little bit about yourself, and then we'll talk about your rabbit hole journey and how you come to Bitcoin.
Yeah, of course. Thank you. Yeah. So as you mentioned, the Bitaxa, right? I mean, the project is in itself living in the shadow of the Bitaxa. So I wanted to build on that beautiful project, which really inspired me to, you know, in many, many ways, not only to do this, but also, I suppose, to contribute to the network in a more active manner, because you know, I think it's important for people to not just hodl, but also to use the thing, right? Because it's pretty probably one of the best things that happened to humanity in the last I don't know, maybe since discovery of fire. Yeah, I mean, just to start with my journey, I guess it's. Yeah. I mean, I'm relatively new, I think, for me, like as many people I've, you know, listened, even maybe from your podcast or some other places in person, like the COVID era, COVID period was sort of a light bulb moment for many, I guess, because it was pretty obvious, right? I think that's when the government started to hand over money to people, quite literally. It wasn't until then that it clicked to me that something was wrong. And I remember clearly, like before 2020, well, I've always been interested in economics. In fact, I have a degree in economics. Yeah. But up until then, I was sort of, you know, I was obviously studied the Keynesian side of things. And up until then, I always tried to find meaning in the formulas and and the principle that they study, you know, the animal spirits of the Keynesian school, you know, you just accept those things, but they never quite click. And I think also one of the biggest ideas that led me into Bitcoin was from Saifedean, his book, where I think I related a lot with his view of things he was saying, and as he was also teaching to his students, that a lot of these students were maybe engineering students as well. They had a very logical mind, and when they had to study economics, maybe as part of a module, maybe it wasn't their main degree, but it was just a module of their degree, one of the classes of their degrees, they just couldn't really make sense. They were just learning the formulas and just applying them, but not really clicking with them. So my journey starts there, and I mean, it was very slowly, but then suddenly, right? It was very slow, but then I got like a sudden. I'm not gonna say I went all in, because I always been cautious about stuff in general. But I went all in with my time, suddenly put into things. You know, I started to not dedicate as much time anymore to the fiat side of things, and I started to document myself and really learn about what this technology was and the whole culture behind it. And I suppose from there, as I started to, you know, to be more comfortable with how it works, because I guess for me at the beginning it was, you know, I had the same questions that everyone had, right? Can you? Why it's only 21 million? Why no one can control it? Why no one can just pull a plug? And you know, these sort of questions. And you know, after that really settled with me, I've started to understand that it really is a shame that the main use case today is just holding it and just keeping it there without really doing anything. And I think my first experience with paying was to move it from an exchange. Obviously everyone starts from an exchange, right? But I remember, like, I was moving my coins out and I was super worried, obviously, because it's, I don't know about you, but like the first time I started to do this stuff, I was super worried that, you know, where is this stuff going, end up going? And when I started to move it, like very simply on chain with wallets on my phone and on my, I was really blown away. I don't know. I had like a very magical moment, because I was like, wait, I know this app because I just downloaded it from a GitHub repo. There's no third parties, there's nothing. Like, I have a node at home, like I'm running it with really like scrap computers. I also have a better node, but I really wanted to experiment and just use stuff from, I have this laptop from 2011, like when I was a kid. It does have an SSD, which is essential for running a node, I think. But it just really blew me away. And from there, I started to dig really deep into the technical rabbit hole. And I sort of identified mining centralization as a real practical threat. Yes. And there's more threats. I think Bitcoin is under constant attack. And maybe we can delve into that. But, you know, I've picked what I think I can control, or at least I can contribute actively to, which is mining, and especially as you mentioned, Scott, which I saw the interview actually you had with him. He doesn't really go often into a podcast, so it was good to see him speaking. As you were saying, like, this is pretty significant, because now everyone can contribute in a somewhat meaningful way to mining decentralization.
Yeah, absolutely. Actually, I was impressed because you said that you study economics, and I want to ask you something. I study engineering, and I had classes that it was economy, but in my classes, we had everything related to Keynesians, barely about Austrians. But your career is purely economics. So my question is, like, how much do you learn about actually Austrians economics?
Zero. It was, I mean, maybe I should also say it wasn't pure economics. It was business and economics. There was a lot of accounting as well. But so maybe a pure economics degree would have talked about ocean economics a bit more. But I remember it was just a footnote on one of the lesson slides, and they said, well, it was one of the optional readings, you know, like, there's also this thing, if you want to learn more about it, just go figure it out yourself. But it wasn't presented as a valid...
The curriculum.
Yeah, it wasn't presented as a valid alternative, or even a counter idea. I don't know how to say, like a opposing idea. You know, I think universities should really be a place where you explore ideas, even if they're contradicting themselves, just to any sort of debate is, but there's no debate, you know, in economics, like there's no, maybe there is a debate whether you should print money in this or the other way, but there really isn't a debate on whether you should really print money. I think, I remember I wasn't really interested at the time until obviously I found about Saifedean.
Mm-hmm.
And but as he says, I mean, this makes a lot of sense because, as he says, universities at the end of the day are part of the Keynesian system, right? They're just nodes in a way. You could see them that way.
Yeah, and the incentives is of course staying in Keynesians, not teaching Austrian at all. So yeah, but I think that's something that actually in El Salvador we are starting to change, at least in the public school curriculums. That's why they're starting to teach the Bitcoin diploma, which is now part of the educational system in all the public schools.
Yeah, so I think I know where it is. I have Mi Primer Bitcoin somewhere here. Oh, there it is.
Oh, yeah, the diploma, the book.
The Bitcoin diploma, yeah, this one, right?
Yeah, absolutely. Oh, that's cool, man.
Yeah, I was giving it away to people because I think it's amazing, man. Like, I read it in a couple of hours, and it was pretty incredible how like, basically all my, I don't know, 4 years knowledge at that time was condensed in very simple, in
where such did you very get simple it, by form. The way?
I wish maybe one day. It was printed by some of the local Bitcoin communities around here. They just were printing it for,
yeah, that's
and
cool,
giving back to the project. So they were printing it for a few sats and then a mm-hmm. few extra sats that they would give back to the project Mi Primer Bitcoin.
Yeah, that's also something important that they should support grassroots efforts, and that's something that also I want to the audience knows, that even we have the Bitcoin office, which they're doing their own curriculum with the educational system, with the Ministry of Education, sorry. It's also grassroots efforts. So that as Mi Primer Bitcoin or Node Nations, Bitcoin Citadel, which is, well, which the founders are the guys from Bitcoin Berlin. So yeah, it's really important to keep supporting grassroots efforts because I think between Bitcoin, there's no competition. Actually, we should support all the projects, because the more the merrier, right? So yeah, these 100%. Things are important. Yeah, and I hope that that replicate into more nations, that they can follow this path. But also I wanted to ask you, so in your case of Bitcoin, well, you mentioned that you read Saifedean, but he had like a specific aha moment or it was like a process, like what convinced you that to be fully on Bitcoin?
Good question. I suppose, yeah, I mean, as to tap back on what I was saying, the handouts from the government at the time during COVID, I think that those were somewhat of a haha moment, if you will, because I don't know where you were in the world at that time, but at that time I was in the UK and we had something called the furlough scheme, which was basically the government would say, don't go to work because it's dangerous.
Oh, yeah.
And obviously, you know, you can't just say that and people would just lose their jobs. So the government was giving them 80% of their pay. So it didn't matter. Sorry, I should say 80% was given to the businesses and then the business was paying 20%. So maybe no, it's not exactly like that. But anyway, the government was giving pretty much money for people to not go to work. And because I was considered to be an essential worker, I couldn't mm-hmm. do that. I actually went to work. So for me, it was like, well, why am I working? Like, why am I basically paying for these people to not work? And mm-hmm. and I mean, at that time, it was pretty obvious, but it's something that keeps going on, right? Because, you know, I think the end goal for many governments is to have some sort of universal base income. And so, mm-hmm. you know, they extract as much wealth as they can from people mm-hmm. and then just, you know, try to keep who doesn't have a job or doesn't want to work happy, you know, you owning nothing and being happy, as they say.
Yeah.
But yeah, for me, that was the haha moment. And I guess, if you will, other things where, as I said, when I started to use the thing, right, because I understood that you can move incredible amounts of wealth without really needing anyone, any counterparty, anything, just a laptop, really, and like an internet connection.
Mm-hmm.
And that was, it really blew my mind.
Absolutely. Yeah, I get you. I was actually right now in Spain, because normally I come and go.
Mm.
So yeah, I was, but during COVID I was here. So it was basically the same thing. We have a curfew, we couldn't move. It was very restrictive here.
Yeah. Yeah.
So I understand that part. What is what I wanted to ask you? Oh yeah, so coming back to Bitcoin, how do you get interested into mining? I mean, Bitcoin has several rabbit holes, but what gets you to start into mining?
Yeah, so I think mining always kind of scared me in a way, because it always was. So in fact, it was one of the things that I picked up probably later on in my journey, more recently.
Mm-hmm.
And because yeah, almost like on my readings and my learning, I always parked the topic in a way. I always said, yeah, that happens. There's very powerful computers that do very complicated mathematical equations, and that's it. But when in reality, they're very simple, they're very dumb machines. They just iterate over the same stuff trillions of times every, I mean, the whole network is trillion of times every second.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, at the time, I guess I was scared, because obviously you have these bigger mining farms and huge businesses. So it's not something that the average user thinks that they can participate in, right? But then enter the BTAX. And my first interaction with the BTAX was at a very small meetup that we had, mm-hmm. where I was living at the time. And there was one guy called Dunk from, I think he goes by IMGPIO, is a project on GitHub. And I think he contributed to the original BTAX. It wasn't Scott directly involved with Scott and Want Clue, I think, which are the main maintainers, but he was working around it and he was contributing, and he brought this one of the first BitAxes to see for everyone.
Oh, cool.
in action, and he built like some extra stuff, like some LEDs that like make it light up if you find a block or whenever you send a share to the mining pool. And that was probably my second big haha moment, I guess, because I was blown away. I was like, oh crap, you can mine with that thing, and it just sits on your desk. And so I studied a little bit more, and it's all public, it's all open source. You can see the schematics, you can see the code that it sits in the ESP chip that makes the whole operating system interacting with the hardware. And yeah, I bought one at the time. It was one of the early ones, so it wasn't really powerful. But then I think there was a big jump with the, I think it's called Supra, was probably when it went more mainstream. In fact, I bought my Supra when I went to Bitcoin Tokyo, mm-hmm. in 2024. And I bought a couple, and that's when I thought, yeah, well, you can probably do something meaningful with it, because it's like almost one. If you, I think that one went almost to 1 terahash per second, which if you do the math, is not insignificant, because you probably need around millions, a few millions, like 8 millions to do. Contributes to 1% of the network, but I think 1% is pretty impressive. And I think Scott was talking about in your interview actually that, you know, if you put these together, they can actually contribute to some extent. And yeah, you know, I told my story in the Gadger fundraiser, and I, you know, when I was there, I had nowhere to plug in, because it was a very small hotel, so I had no desks, and you know, on the floor it was kind of weird, because if you had people coming in cleaning the room, etc. So, I was like, well, why can you not just plug into the wall? And so that's how I started building my project. But as opposed to go back to your mining question, yeah, I think the BTAX is what really drew me into mining, and then build on my personal stuff.
Okay. You mentioned Geyser, and I know you started your funding there.
Yes.
So I have a question for the people that probably want to start their own projects on Geyser. Do you have any tips, or why do you do it on Geyser? I mean, me as well started my own podcast in Geyser, the first funding.
Oh, cool. When was it?
almost 3 years ago now.
Okay. Yeah, it's been around for a while, but it's I think it's now getting a bit more traction. And yeah, I heard the first time about Geyser, I think, with what's the name of that book? Bushido of Bitcoin from Svetsky. I think he founded it there, and I did contribute at the time, but I ended up buying the book on Amazon. what was it saying? Yeah, I found it there, but then kind of forgot about it. I think that was a few years ago. And then, yeah, when I started to build this project, I thought, you know, it wasn't necessarily about funding. It was more about having a platform to let people know more about the project and contribute and buy their own if they wanted. I found it very slick. Let me say that, because it was, okay. I think it took me like an hour to put it together. And, you know, you don't need approvals because there's no fiat involved. I mean, if you want fiat, then you can go through, okay, and that's obviously a legal requirement. But if you just want to get sats, you really need just a wallet or Lightning, preferably. I think I did mine with Lightning. I don't know if you probably can on chain as well, but I think they're now changing also system a little bit, because the funds used to sit in their own wallet, and I think now they just give you the sats immediately, so you don't have to cash out. So I think that's even better. But I guess it gives people also a layer of responsibility they have to take on.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, no, I was asking because it has evolved. So the first time that I do it, it was the platform was not like that. As you told, they were the custodians of the money, and then you cash out. But now it goes there, and yeah. So I was asking you, just in comparison, and people I know that could be also interested in probably do their own.
Yeah, I mean, I would say I met all the people that are working on it, which are three people, believe it or not. Maybe there's more collaborators, but I think the main guys is three people, and I know Mick, the founder, closely. Well, closely. I mean, I met him in person. They're amazing people. Like they really want your project to succeed, especially if they, you know, they might, if you have a cool project, they generally might reach out and help you with the, you know, doing some marketing, and I think they have a lot of networks as well, which I know you can even pay for if you want. And I think they take a small percentage and they put your project in mailing lists and X accounts, which is, I think, very cool for people. There are a lot of alternatives recently, I think. Well, I say a lot, but I know a couple. One is Angle, which I think is more of a protocol than a platform. It's technically open source, so it's maybe less for profit. And then the other one, I think BTC Pay Server is doing a fundraising functionality, which is interesting. But I think Geyser is, if you are at the beginning, like it's your first campaign, and you know very little about you know, selling something or selling yourself, even selling your project, I think they can give you a lot of support in that.
Some others, right? So it depends. Cuando dejas tus activos digitales en un exchange o en custodia de alguien más, te expones a riesgos de terceros no deseados. A diferencia del sistema bancario tradicional, Bitcoin te permite tomar el control total de tus fondos utilizando tus propias claves privadas. Esto te permite ser soberano y esencialmente tu propio banco. Al tomar el control de tus Bitcoin, puedes evitar riesgos innecesarios de terceros. Almacenar tus Bitcoin en custodia de terceros como los exchanges puede exponerte a ataques de actores malintencionados, gobiernos o estafadores que lo único que quieren es apoderarse de tu dinero. Las billeteras de hardware aumentan la seguridad de tu billetera porque tus claves privadas se almacenan en un dispositivo especializado que no está siempre conectado al internet. Como te he dicho antes, mantener tus claves almacenadas en un dispositivo en línea puede exponerte a factores adicionales de ataque, por lo que se recomienda usar una billetera de hardware al almacenar grandes cantidades de Bitcoin durante largos periodos de tiempo. Jade es una billetera de hardware no custodial para Bitcoins y Liquid, que ofrece opciones de firma simple y firmas múltiples. Yo personalmente lo utilizo para almacenar mis bitcoins, ya que me siento mucho más seguro manteniendo mis bitcoins en una billetera fría que en una almacenada, por ejemplo, en mi teléfono. Si estás pensando en adquirir uno para ti, no olvides utilizar el código de descuento de nuestro show, BitCorner Podcast. De esta forma estarás apoyando directamente el show y además obtendrás un 10% de descuento para la compra de tu billetera fría. This podcast is brought to you by Bull Bitcoin, the most trusted Bitcoin-only exchange built by Bitcoiners or Bitcoiners who give a damn about sovereignty, not altcoins, no custody, just pure Bitcoin straight to your wallet. Get your own virtual event so banks can spy on your Bitcoin activity. Buy Bitcoin instantly or send bank transfer to Canada, Europe, Mexico, and Argentina in a snap for pennies. Ditch the banks, screw the shady remittances apps. Head to boldbitcoin.com, use the code BitCornerPodcast, and start stacking sats in the right way, or send money home cheap and fast. Bold Bitcoin. Own your money, destroy fiat.
Yeah, absolutely. No, I believe that. So, because even with my girlfriend, we're doing one that it's very monetary, it's for funding some schools in Nepal, but she's not a Bitcoiner. Well, she's learning Bitcoin through me, so and so she was like, where can we go and fund this to help, because she's partnered with an NGO of Nepal. I told her, do it in Geyser and you will see how it goes, because in this, it is in the same way as you, that she just wanted a platform to show it, right? But no, yeah, we're getting a lot of support, so I think that's the first step, so to do so. And then with networking, anything between Bitcoiners, we know people from people from people that are always interested in any topic that you want to contribute, right?
Amazing.
Yes. And what I want to ask you, so if you can explain to the people, what is your project, what is Wallax?
So as the name suggests, is basically a BTAX on the wall, and at the core it's basically a BTAX without too much change. The only change I would say is the screen has to be placed somewhere else, because obviously the box itself, and I've got one here, it's open because I was doing some stuff, and basically the screen goes on top. And so the connector inside has to be soldered, but that's pretty much it. Everything else kind of screws on or plugs in. So maybe I can show you internally, but it's all via 3D printed parts as well. So my goal with this was to let people download their files and assemble their own thing. And every component that is used to make this is available in major electronics store like DigiKey, Mouser, all those large retailers. So basically this is at the core. So you have a PSU which connects to the mains via a plug, which I don't have here, but it's basically this front plate, which sits on top of here. And then there is a divider that connects, sandwiches basically between the two parts. And then this one in the middle, I think, is the core of the project, because it's a custom PCB that then interfaces with the pins of the BTAX, so it can light up when a share is found. And it also inside there is cool extra cooling inside, because it's in this enclosed space, so it tends to run very hot, so that there is a chip, basically there is a don't know how technical I should go, but basically there is an Atmega chip that controls that fan and the LEDs. So this is one of the first iterations. These pins then go on top of on the back of the BTAX. And then on my most recent prototype, I'm basically adding USB charging. So if you are in an airport or something, you can just plug in and you mine away, but you also, you can also charge your phone.
That's cool.
So I guess if you just plug in, I never really had anyone asking me what was that, or no one really cares, because it's not too flashy. I mean, you It has some LEDs where you can turn them off.
Okay.
But yeah, I mean, if you're maybe at your office, maybe it's kind of more evident, so you can just plug your phone and yeah, it's just a funky charger.
What about the noise from
AliExpress? It's not too loud. So the fan is a Noctua. So this fan here is basically is basically negligible. It doesn't make any sound. The fan that is between here is a laptop fan.
You can
hear it, but it's not too much. When I bought my first BTAX, I remember when it uses like those standard black fans that come with it, like those cheap ones, that's much louder. Just put that into perspective. I think if you bought a Noctua that and you're used to the Noctua experience, then it's louder than that, but it really is not, I think for me at least, is not a problem.
Okay. And at what stage are you of the project currently?
So the project is technically ready. I need to refine it in the sense that, as I said, I'm adding this USB-C charging and I need to do some testing because I don't want to send something that maybe stops working after a while. I need to check also that we're okay with temperatures.
The life cycle.
Yeah, exactly. And also I have to test it on the more recent BTAXs because at the moment I tested only on the 601 and the 401, but we've now got the 602 and also the 650, which is dual chip, so it might be a challenge in terms of heating, but again, there's more testing to do. But I mean, for the people that contributed by purchasing one of these, shipment will be around June, is on track. I might basically test with more models just to give more options to people if they want to use a 650 or a more recent BTAX.
And what are you going to stay focused on? Like a small scale is going to be for, you know, educational miners, or do you plan to develop into, I know this is just the first model, but eventually into more powerful miners? What is your vision?
Yeah, so first of all, before a Bitcoin miner, I'm a fiat miner. So I have to balance the two. So obviously my fiat job is taking most of the time. So I don't have a lot of time for development, but my goal would be to obviously, once everything is working and I know it works and it's reliable, I will basically publish all the schematics and the 3D models so people can just start doing their own thing. That was my goal with this. I wanted to basically make as many people as possible to build their own, and so that way it could just, you know, gather interest from people and people can build on it, and like I did with a lot of these things, right? The BTAX projects I built on it. This PCB here is from another project, which is the BTALO. So the same way I want people to build on my project. So that's one. The second idea, and I had some proposals, was to make a more retail friendly version, something more production friendly. So not 3D printed, but maybe molded, injection molded. And that could be something I will work on, but yeah, to TBC.
Okay, that's cool. Also, I just remind that I made this question actually to BitMaker and also to Scott. I want to also know your point of view about this.
Yeah.
Now that you're actually working on mining, like how do you see the evolution of from solo mining to mining pools? And, you know, what does this mean for decentralization and the accessibility to do this?
Yeah, I think I wasn't in Bitcoin, and certainly not in Bitcoin mining before 2020, 2021. I think solo mining has only been a thing like at the very beginning, when people were mining with the CPUs at the very beginning, but then GPUs. And then I think in 2013, 14, they started to make these USB devices that could mine some Bitcoin, but again, that was quickly obsolete. So it's never really been a thing. I think this is probably the peak in Bitcoin history when it comes to solo mining. And I see a lot of potential. I think, as I said at the beginning, like these are not insignificant numbers. Like if you can sell a few millions of these BTAXs, which I think probably we're not there yet, but if they start to be more powerful, and I think they are catching up with network difficulty, because I think we are we're plateauing with the network difficulty. I think has been stable for a while, which has never been for the last 6 years. It's always like growing vertically, but we are, I think, now at a stage where these things can really be powerful enough to actually mine blocks. And five confirmed blocks since July 2024.
Mm-hmm.
And the interval, I think what's interesting is that the interval between finding these has been compressing quite a bit, because it was, mm-hmm. I mean, from the first to the second was 200 odd days, like it took a few months, and then it was 179 days, and then 52 mm-hmm. days, and then now 25 days. So you keep hearing about these solo blocks more and more, and I think that's incredible. There's also a lot of talk about how I think Foundry is recently fluctuating between 30% and 40% of network dominance, and I think that's not really good. I don't think it's an existential threat yet, but we certainly don't want to experiment and go closer than that.
Yeah. Also, can I ask you a controversial question that we were talking before the podcast?
Of course. Love controversial questions.
Okay. Yeah. What do you think about? Well. First, I'll ask you this one later, but about taking the decision of people what to put into accepting into a block that is mine, right? So,
oh yeah,
I know there's now it's a big topic here, and there's a big discussion about it. So, what do you think about all this?
Yeah, I guess you're referring to the op return.
Yeah,
op return saga. Yeah. So, there's quite a lot to unpack. I think I've changed my mind a few times. I think that's good. You don't want to be. I think there's a lot of teams around there, right? They mm-hmm. people like to team up with different factions, and I think that becomes political. I don't really like that.
Yeah.
But my general feeling is that you should be conservative with Bitcoin development as much as you can. That said, there's also a case for, I think, you know, Bitcoin, if you look at mempool at the moment, there really isn't mm-hmm. much going on. Bitcoin can handle much more. And there are a lot of use cases, like, for example, covenants. I know that that's another big topic that people, you know, developers want to implement. So I think Bitcoin needs more use cases, but I think putting arbitrary data inside a block is not one of them. And by arbitrary data, I mean anything that can be from a JPEG or an MP3 or a very long text or even snippets of code. You know, there's also risk that you may have malicious code that runs in obviously it can't do anything alone. Like you need probably a two-way attack, right? You need the code in this blockchain, and then you need another somewhere else on your computer. You need somewhere that triggers that code. But imagine like 20,000-30,000 nodes at the moment. I think that's the size of the network that mm-hmm. have all the same malicious code, and that's not good design in my opinion for a $1 trillion network and something of that importance, because I think people forget, and this is also goes back to I think my drive in building on top of Bitcoin and trying to do something with it. People forget that people always give for granted the security of it. But as I said, I think there's constant attacks, and these may or may not be attacks, but I wouldn't like to speculate on that. But some may view it as an attack. And I think if you sit down and everyone sits down and just chills and runs their node and never takes any sort of decisions, then it wouldn't be good for the network. What would happen, like some attack, or again, like even just not being used is an attack in itself. Like I think probably this is more from Wall Street and you know all the treasury companies that mm-hmm. they almost want to gobble all the Bitcoin and basically make it die by not using it. Like so if all the financial institutions have it, they can manipulate the price. the plebs don't have it, they can't use it. And I think that's also another form of an attack.
Yeah, that's why this decentralization is really important in this thing. Right. So normally, in this moment in the podcast, normally this is where my previous guest have a question for my next guest. But as I told you, my previous guest comes after you because he's sick. So, but I have a question for you that actually made to Bob Burnett, and I want to know your opinion as well, because it's quite interesting. It's kind of philosophical, but I think it's a discussion that is currently happening little by little, and is that, you know, that there's a discussion about quantum, because quantum computers.
Yeah.
Little bit are evolving, and there's also this question that what will happen to Bitcoin? There's going to be a threat. Of course, it's software, so if software can be uploaded, then Bitcoin can be safe for the quantum threat, right?
Yeah.
But the question is that, and this is, I think, is philosophical for now, but it will be a time to make a decision, that what do you think should we do with the sats, with the Bitcoin of Satoshi Nakamoto? Because once the quantum threat comes here, should we leave it there? Should we move it to a wallet that is safer? What do you think that you can do about this?
Yeah, that is an amazing question, because I never thought about it, to be honest.
Yeah.
Yeah, because, yeah, it's almost philosophical, because from one end, you can release all the coins and the inflation will go up of Bitcoin for at least for a moment. I don't know. Do you know? Do you have the number on hand? How many coins are at risk?
No, but we can check it out. How many coins are at risk? I'm gonna ask ChatGPT.
Yeah. Same.
So we can double check. Mine says around 14-20% of the total supply. So 3 to 4 millions are considered permanently lost or inaccessible.
I got 1 to 1.1 billion based on early blockchain analysis. Interesting.
Okay. Well,
anyway, I think they are significant numbers. Yeah. Okay. So I think there are a couple of things I would say. You know, from one end, I personally, as I said earlier, I think, you know, you should be as conservative as possible with Bitcoin development. So I am tempted to say that they should probably let it go. But on the other hand, I'm struggling with the fact that one of the core principles of Bitcoin is, you know, private property and the fact that
property,
you know,
rights, exactly.
Property rights, your coins are your coins, and it doesn't matter if they're lost or presumably they are Satoshi's coins. They were someone's coins at some point, so they should stay there. I think I would probably lean towards this last idea, which we should probably find a way to prevent that from happening, on the basis that they were the coins that were mined by Satoshi, and Satoshi ethos, if you will, was to obviously make this thing scale and decentralize. He had to create some coins at the beginning, but I'm sure that if he could have avoided that, he would have. I don't think, or he or they or she, obviously it could be anyone. I think those coins were necessary to be. And maybe he even wanted, there's also a case to be like, who knows, maybe he wanted them to be sort of distributed at some point. And that brings the case for maybe some sort of protocol that slowly releases them. Mm-hmm. So I don't know how, I'm not really an expert in Bitcoin development, but how would it be a good idea perhaps slowly release those coins? And so instead of making them vulnerable to a one-time attack and one person gets all of them, why not making them like increase maybe the block rewards by a small percentage, so then they're slowly released into the already existing schedule of coin release.
Okay. Yeah. Interesting. Yeah. For me, it's every time I'm changing my opinion about this.
Yeah.
So, because I think there's a lot of things to consider. It just this question itself is a rabbit hole. So, but it's good to make this question.
It is. Right. I wonder, what did your previous guest answer?
Bob Burnett, he was more aligned to you, like his property rights. So it's very similar to what you answer.
Okay.
But also, yeah. And also, no, his expertise is a little bit, not a little bit, a lot, on mining and block space.
Mm.
Yeah. So he also works with, let me check, what is this company? Well, he doesn't, I think he's part of the director's board of, let me check, of Ocean. Yes, he's board member of Ocean.
Okay.
It's Bob Burnett, that he's one of the guests of the Bitcoin Boomers and the CEO of Barefoot Mining. Actually, he introduced me the concept of block space. I never touched this concept before, but it's quite interesting. He says that actually miners don't mine Bitcoin, they mine blocks. And eventually, well, it's like a huge new market on, well, no new market, but in the future, that will be like a very, how do you say, valuable. In the sense that because of the fees that they will be struggling with miners and everything. So
yeah, it was there's something I always question myself. Like as I said, I think there's a case for that. There's more use cases than Bitcoin. I mean, when I say Bitcoin, I mean block space probably more than than Bitcoin itself. Because I suppose if you do something more with that space, you can also implement some more functionality or something that otherwise you could have not, like for example covenants. But yeah, I still think that arbitrary space, like any type of data, contiguous one and zeros that you can put together without much effort, like you can literally open a text file with your block with your text TXT software of choice and copy paste those one and zeros into a new file and then save it as a .jpg, and that will open a picture. I think that's still probably not the way to do it. But this is good because it opens up the discussion. Anything that opens up the discussion and creates more implementations and more ideas, like for example, Ocean, I think themselves, with all this going on, they are effectively an alternative, and more people can make the decision to move to them and help decentralize the network.
Yeah, absolutely. Gio, we're going to start wrapping up. We almost have an hour.
Yeah.
So is there anything that you want to add about your project that probably I didn't ask you, and probably it's really important to know, or the audience to know?
Yeah, cool. No, I think you asked very good questions. I think I would say, just to reiterate, you know, that the project builds on other projects, and I think my goal here is to also for other people to build on this. So keep your eyes on the project, and when it's open source, please get in touch and let's work on it. There's a lot of things that can be added, can be improved. So I'm obviously, and also if you want to get in touch for, you know, anything, any ideas, absolutely, please do so.
Absolutely. And this is a question that had the opportunity to talk with also with Scott or a Bitmaker to get some feedback on that? I'm just asking.
No, not with those guys. Although I did speak with some people in the community just to get some ideas. And especially when I published it, a lot of people got in touch with their ideas. So that helped me a lot. But yeah, I didn't really want to be too loud before because I didn't really have anything to work with. But now I think with the prototype, I'll probably... yeah, again, publish it and see what people think, and if they want to get in touch to or send a PR, then absolutely.
Okay, cool. I will leave also in the podcast note the links of your project so people can check it out more.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah. I would say the Geyser campaign is as terminated. So I'm working with the guys to open just a shop so people can still contribute by buying their kit, or if they just want to drop some sats, then they can do that. So yeah, it's not yet live, but hopefully by the time this goes out, it will be.
Okay, cool. Perfect. And yeah, so now is my last question. My last question is, I always like to ask this. What do you think is the most valuable thing that Bitcoin has provided in your life? And I'm not talking, of course, about the monetary value. I'm talking, the question is more deeper than that.
Yeah, no, that's a very good question. I mean, in fact, the monetary value is probably not that significant, right? Because if you are anything like me or what we discussed in general, you probably wouldn't trade on it, right? You wouldn't sell and get profits. But I think this is pretty, you know, my project is probably the biggest gift that Bitcoin gave me, because the biggest value that I got from Bitcoin, because I don't know, I mean, there's a lot of open source projects out there, but the scale of Bitcoin and the complexity of it, and the community and the cohesiveness of the community around it and the willingness of all the people to help each other, I think is great. And you know, I don't think I would have been able to, you know, starting from a economics business background, to pivot into more like electronic engineering and start really understanding how hardware works, how even coding to some extent. I mean, nowadays with AI, maybe coding is more trivial, and I've done a lot of that. But I think it's, you know, I quote Jeff Booth, I don't know if you follow him, but
absolutely.
He says that Bitcoin gives you purpose when you start shifting away your energy from the old system to the new system. Well, new system, hopefully, but to the Bitcoin system.
Yeah.
Bitcoin sort of gives it back to you because it's a circular thing. It just comes back to you in a way. I don't know if it makes sense, because in the fiat system, your energy is sort of wasted because your energy is extracted from you, as opposed to Bitcoin. When you put your energy into Bitcoin, anything, it could be a project, could be a donation, somehow will go back to you, maybe with a better community, with a better, more secure network, more products available to the people that then can build on it, contribute to it. And I think this is probably the main gift for me from Bitcoin.
I totally agree with you, because I love this, actually, the simple phrase, simple quote that we had, that fix the money, fix the world, right? Because it's so simple, but but in the background, it's more like a deeper thought, because it talks about the first order effect, that if you fix the money, then fix some stuff in the society, like poverty, corruption, racism, wars, etc., right? So yeah. I agree with you. I love it. Gio, thank you very much for your time. Thank you for being in the podcast. It was fun. I learned a lot. Yeah. And yeah, hopefully to have you in another episode in a couple of months when everything is already released and you have your more iteration of it. So good luck, by the way.
Thank you. No, yeah, I really, really appreciate your time. And it will be good to see some in the wild, right? Because at the moment, I think I only was able to use it and take pictures and videos of it, but I'm already working on sending one of these prototypes to Bitcoin community over in Japan. Mm-hmm. They will do some testing, hopefully, and take some.
That's nice. Awesome. Yeah, let's keep in touch about this and keep us updated in your socials. So yeah, anyways, thank you very much. And guys, that was it. So see you next week. Ciao.